great day to buy a house from Laura Dwyer Schlecky at Thinking Real Estate.
I like that.
Yes, please do. I'll either buy or sell a house through Laura, because that'll help keep me in the style to which I've unfortunately become accustomed.
There you go. Good morning.
Yeah. Hey, how are you?
Good.
Hey, Greg, I want you to know that we sold the Kubota by announcing it on your radio show.
Oh.
That's the only way we advertised it.
We're big into Kubotas here.
Apparently, yeah.
Well, now you just have to sell my airplane for me.
Okay.
So it's pretty airplane, and then we have a 2002 Jeep for $3,600, and then a nice 2019 black Chevy Silverado 2500, beautiful truck for $55,000.
So. What is this, Tradio?
Yeah. And then we have a beautiful piece of land out on Skiff Lake, 250 feet on Skiff Lake,
that's
for sale too. Yeah. You can't go wrong.
This is a garage
sale. But now
it's
something else. Yeah, I don't know how you put this vacant land that's 8 acres or something in the garage, but sure, why not?
Yeah.
Hey, before we get started here, for the last, I think, 5 or 6 years, a group of guys and I have organized a Starbucks, Jackson Starbucks barista Christmas fund or whatever, for the baristas there. And we've been pretty successful. But this year, I couldn't sit in Starbucks and, twist arms of people as they were coming into Starbucks to get coffee.
Right.
And so it's been a little difficult. So I set up a GoFundMe page. It's the first time I'd ever done it. And for any of the Starbucks people who are listening, if they wouldn't mind going to the Starbucks Barista Support Fund, as how it's phrased, at the GoFundMe page, and just make a donation. And what's happened at Starbucks is, because of COVID-19, they shut down the other day, and I just found out from the manager that they're not going to open until at least December 28th. So the baristas, who were already struggling because of what's happened with the pandemic, are struggling even more. So if anybody's interested in doing that, just go to Google Starbucks Barista Support Fund. It's a GoFundMe page, and whatever they can do would be very helpful. We'd really appreciate it. Anyway, that's my pitch for today.
There you go.
Okay.
Baristas are us.
Yeah, well, it's a wonderful group of people there. They've been working under very difficult times, and they're right at the front line. And apparently, this is the second time that they've been shut down as a result of COVID, because they're seeing a lot of people every single day. So it's very difficult.
Yep.
Oh, goodness. So we had an interesting call from a realtor yesterday on a property that we actually used to own. And so we thought we would kind of talk about clearing title. And speaking of title, I'm pretty sure Ron Ellison and American Title and Midstate Title are pretty packed till the end of the year. So if you thought you were going to get your house or property closed by January or December 31, it's probably going to be hard to squeeze it into the title company.
Yeah, one of the interesting things I found out, I had a big closing on Friday of a client that has owned about a dozen or more manufactured home communities throughout southern Michigan, all the way over toward Battle Creek. And we closed on the last three of them on Friday. And because the purchaser wanted to have somebody, only one of the parks was in Jackson, another park was in Marshall, and the other park up in Pleasant Lake. And so we ended up using First American Title over in Bloomfield Hills is who the buyer ended up selecting. And which is too bad. I tried to route them to either Midstate or American. But so anyway, we get down, the closing kept getting pushed back and back, and the day before the closing, we're working on a flurry of closing documents, very complicated closings. And so then I said, we'll just have my client use remote notary if the title company will do that, et cetera. So I found out that that title company was not doing remote notarization at all. So I said, as long as you have safety protocols in place, I'll have my client show up to sign documents at the title company. Well, they weren't even doing in-person closings. You can't show up at First American to do the closing. I do know that American Title here in Jackson, as long as you follow safety protocols of wearing a mask, etc., that you can do the closing in person. Mm-hmm. But apparently there are plenty of title companies that aren't doing closings in person, Laura.
Yeah, well, even at American Title, they're not letting agents participate in the closing.
Well, how can that be? Because when I was there 2 weeks ago, there were agents that were there in the closing.
Maybe the agent was signing on behalf of the seller. I don't know, but I know that the last two closings I've had, we couldn't be there.
Well, that's interesting because, yeah, as I say, 2 weeks ago I was there dropping off a bunch of deeds to be recorded, and the parties were there and the agent. No, what's that?
That was more than 2 weeks ago.
3 weeks ago? So you think this is a recent change?
Yeah, it was. I think this protocol has been in place at least 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
So I know the time you're talking about, that was longer ago than what you think. You know, you're basing things on COVID time, which is different than real time.
I don't know what you mean by that.
It's been a long year, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Anyhow, let's get to our subject. So the question was, this particular parcel we've talked about on the radio before was what you called a gore, and we did a quick claim deed to the owners of the property, but the title company won't insure over it because it's the original, if I understand this right, Bill, it's the original government survey, so there was nobody to... I guess explain it, because I'm not doing a very good job.
Yeah, no, you're doing a very terrible job of explaining it. First of all, anybody who's a dressmaker knows what a gore is. In an A-line dress, that starts the piece of fabric starts, it's a triangle, and it starts at a point at the waistline and then goes down as a triangle down to where the hemline is. That's a gore, a narrow strip, and it doesn't have to be a triangle, but it typically is. And the gore, as far as real estate is concerned, is a parcel of land that is either a product of two surveys that don't meet. In other words, I can start a survey at a north quarter corner post and go one way, and then somebody starts at the south quarter corner post and goes the other way, and the surveys don't meet, and there's a no man's land in between. That's essentially what a gore is. Now, the gore could actually go back to the original U.S. land patent, because when the government survey was developed in the late 1800s to fund the U.S. government's war debt, you know, they had the Northwest Territories, Ohio, Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin, et cetera. They came up with the government survey, which is a meets and bounds description, but based upon dividing all of that land into townships and sections. And so what happened typically was, as a result of the curvature of the earth, as you move north, the lines, the north-south lines, range lines, come closer together, and so they would correct every 24 miles. But bottom line here is that you ended up, when the U.S. land patent was made, sometimes none of the lands were given out by the U.S. government. In other words, you trace your title all the way back to either a U.S. land patent or a land grant given by the French or the Spanish, whoever happened to be in control of the land. For example, in Detroit, there aren't necessarily, you don't trace back to a U.S. land patent, you trace back to a land grant from the French government. So anyway, the point here is that in the parcel we're talking about, there's a narrow strip of land between the property owner to the north and the property owner to the south. So now the question is, then the part and the people to the south, the owners to the south, all the way back to when did the Phillips originally buy the property? Probably back in the 60s, Laura?
Yeah, I have no idea.
So the Phillips and then us and then the successors all used that parcel of property as if we all owned it. So now, clearly, there is a claim to that property by the property owner to the south. The question is, how do you get a title insurance company to insure it? So you go to the title insurance company in order really to be able to give a warranty deed to it and to warrant title. You'd have to have the title company trace the ownership of that land all the way back. In other words, go as far back. And they may end up going all the way back to the original U.S. land patent. They may, in many circumstances, it goes all the way back to the first grantor, or grantee, rather, by the U.S. government. In other words, when this land was conveyed out by the U.S. government, it was conveyed out in large sections. So there may have been a single landowner who got that parcel, but then when that landowner conveyed out, based upon whether it was surveys or just the descriptions done without a survey, this narrow strip of land was never conveyed out. So what you would do is have the title company do a search, go all the way back, find out who, how far back it went. Now, one of the problems is going to be, let's suppose you go back to like the middle 1800s to find out the person who owned it. Now you, in order to sue somebody on a quiet title action in the circuit court, you'd have to trace on who the current heirs are, if there were any, trace the heirs of whoever it was that owned it in 1850. It becomes a very, very complicated and very, very difficult procedure. So typically what happens is there's an affidavit of occupation saying so-and-so's occupied it for a period of umpteen years. Adverse possession is 15 years, so at least if it's longer than 15 years, 15 years or longer, generally you just give a quick claim deed to it and let bygones be bygones. Now, if the property owner to the north attempts to make a claim to it, even though the property owner to the north has never occupied it, never used it, now you could end up in a quiet title action vis-a-vis that party to the north, so that at least as far as that person is concerned, they would have no rights to it. Since that parcel we're talking about doesn't have any access, there's no public access, it doesn't go all the way to Jackson Road, what happens is the only two people who could have an interest in it are the property owner to the north, the property owner to the south. So now, once you've resolved it between those two, you're golden. Nobody else is ever going to make a claim to it. Well, that was a long-winded explanation, wasn't it?
That was. But I hope people
that's correct,
that.
Bill.
But pretty straightforward. I mean, you see quiet title actions. Look, I just finished a quiet title action in circuit court where we had a land contract, and land contract vendee passed away. So we had to start an estate because now I don't have anybody to sue. And so now I've got to create an estate. I have to then start an action in the district court for forfeiture. I start a circuit court action for quiet title against the estate. We just wrapped those up about 2-3 weeks ago so that we got our judgment. So usually things are a little more straightforward. What I did want to say on this, if you're a land contract vendor or you hold a mortgage, lawyer does a land contract forfeiture or foreclosure or does a mortgage foreclosure, and in the midst of it, the land contract purchaser or the borrower on the mortgage say, hey, look, I don't want to fight it. I'll just give you a quick claim deed or a deed in lieu of foreclosure, and we'll let bygones be bygones. First of all, the lawyer, and this happens all the time for lawyers that don't do real estate on a regular basis. First of all, when you do a foreclosure or a forfeiture, you ought to get a title search because you need to bring into the action everybody that purports to hold an interest in that property. But a lot of times a lawyer just sues the land contract vendee or the mortgagor without considering who else may have an interest. It could be a first mortgagee. At any rate, then what happens in the midst of it, the borrower says, okay, or the land contract buyer says, I'll give up, I'll just give you a deed. Well, then the lawyer should do a title search at that point to find out if there are any intervening interests, because our law says that if you don't complete the foreclosure to the end and you take a deed from the purchaser that owes you the money, you take subject to everything that was on that property at the time the deed was given. So if you do a title search and you find out that there's still some other interest out there, you'd be absolutely nuts to take a deed from the land contract purchaser or from the mortgage borrower. You have to go through the entire process or else get a quick claim deed from whoever else is claiming the interest. I mean, these are all the nuances of doing a foreclosure, a forfeiture, trying to quiet title a property that get pretty complex.
Isn't that one of the reasons why when the city is disposing of the properties that the city owns, that title insurance should be involved?
Yeah, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago with respect to sale of tax foreclosed properties, that you need to go to the title company and have a title search done. And really what I want is I want to know that when I get done with the foreclosure or when I get done with buying the tax foreclosed property and I go to sell it again, that I'm not going to have a problem in terms of being able to get title insurance for the purchaser to whom I'm selling the property. And you don't take care of that at the end when you got a purchase agreement in place to sell the property, because now it's too late. That purchaser may be long gone by the time you're able to get the quiet title action done. So you want to do it at the front end before, so that you anticipate whatever problems may exist.
Bill, you were right on the gore. My Oxford Dictionary says a triangular or tapering piece of material used in making a garment, sail, or umbrella.
That's exactly right. you were actually questioning my knowledge of that, weren't you?
I thought you might be April fooling me.
you didn't know I was heavy into dressmaking?
I'm not sure I know that you're heavy into dressmaking.
Laura, 1 minute. Laura?
Oh, okay. Well, I guess... Oh, you know what? I got to announce... I forgot. I got to announce the winner of the money.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness sake. What am I thinking? Let me find the winner. Super excited.
Drum roll.
So... the winner of this week's Shop Small, Win Big is Megan O'Dowd. Megan O'Dowd. She won it by shopping at the Clothing Carousel, which is located on Franklin Street. She spent $27.46. And we had 197 submissions this week. So we're averaging right in there. Everybody's right below that $30 mark, and we're just hovering around that $200 submission, so it's a really good odds that you could win $1,000 like Megan O'Dowd just won by shopping at Clothing Carousel. The next and final drawing will be next week, same time, same place, for $1,000. So congratulations, Megan. You're $1,000 richer. And so shop small, win big, everybody. It's important to support your local
shop
retailers.
Shop local.
Shop local. And Artitude's going to be open on the 26th and 27th. We've extended our hours and days after Christmas just a couple days. And so some of our art will be, I don't know if all of it, but what's there will be available. What's left is going to be available maybe on sale. So, come to Artitude this week. And then my final thing is I want to say happy birthday to Mark Meyer, my business partner. I don't know how old he turned tomorrow.
Come on.
I don't know. I think he's 59. I don't know for sure, though. He looks like he's 45. So happy birthday to Mark. And then I'm hoping that this holiday week brings a lot, is filled with fun and laughter, and everybody stays safe. So that's all I've got.
Merry Christmas.
Happy Hanukkah. Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas. Is Bill making you a dress?
I think so.